Hello and welcome to History Gap, the Olympic Games mini-series.
That's right, we're retelling the history of the Olympics by celebrating some of the women who were integral to the early years of the Olympics and women's sports.
In this week's episode, we are looking at the life and actions of Alice Milliat, a sports enthusiast and campaigner who fought tirelessly for women to compete at the Olympics.
Yes, because as we know from our Charlotte Cooper episode, if you haven't listened, and maybe you'll start there, women and the Olympics was a bit of a controversial topic for the male organisers of the Olympics. So women were really only allowed to partake in feminine sports like horse riding, golf, or tennis.
Men love to gender things, don't they?
They really do.
Let's get into the story of Alice Milliat and the Olympics.
Yes, please.
Alice was born in 1884 and raised in Nantes in France. When she was 18, she met a man, married, and moved to London. Whilst in the Big Smoke, she worked as a nanny and a stenographer. A stenographer is someone who transcribes speech in shorthand, usually in a legal or medical proceeding. Outside of work, Alice lived an active lifestyle, from swimming and hockey. She also particularly loved rowing. Although women's rowing wouldn't become an official sport, whatever that means, until 1954, women did partake in the sport, coinciding with the rise of college rowing between universities such as Oxford and Cambridge. All in all, sport was a big part of Alice's life, and she realised the positive impact sport had on women, whether that was psychological benefits or its ability to unite women together. Around the beginning of the First World War in 1914, Alice's husband passed away and Alice relocates to Paris. At this time in history, Paris and Europe was experiencing the rise of feminism. The World War had opened up the social hierarchy for women like never before. Some women were even being given the right to vote, and women took over from men in occupations and in sports. In the UK, we know that women's football drew large crowds, and in France, women were taking to the playing fields and gymnasiums. For the women at least, sport was becoming less of a novelty and less masculine.
I think it's clear that like, Alice has like a total passion for sport.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
It's nice to see a woman in this instance who kind of has sport as a hobby.
Yeah.
In a sense. And yes. It isn't like she loves sport, but she isn't like, okay, I love sport and I'm going to be the first woman to do X, Y, Z. Like, I love sport and it's going to be a real nice part of my life.
Yeah. And like recognizing that like, oh, it's actually making me feel really good. And also it's like really freeing for women to be able to like have hobbies that are physically like challenging, and obviously because they're living in a world where they're literally like, especially if you're an upper class woman.
Yeah.
You're like wrapped in candy floss basically.
And like wanting to bring that to other women as well and being like, oh, I really enjoy this. You should enjoy it too. It's nice.
And she's also like living in a really interesting time, like the start of liberation for women. The way women's lives changed so much.
Yeah.
Like having to do all the things that men previously did. It must have just been, I mean, they must have learned like so much about themselves, is what I'm saying.
And also such an interesting thing that like, so women's football, like football was huge for women first. Like women had football first, guys.
I know.
And then obviously men got into it and took it from us.
Yeah.
And now it's slowly kind of coming back. Like at time of recording, we have unfortunately just lost the Euros.
Yes.
But the women won it last year.
I know.
I'm sorry to say it. I'm sorry. I hate to say it. I hate to be the one to say it. But the women brought it home when the men did not.
I do think there was a really interesting narrative around the Euros where men were like definitely trying to erase women's achievements.
There's definitely, I think it's definitely like a sense that men, like men's football is the default and like women's is the not default.
Yeah. I think there was, I don't know who it was, but there was some guy on TV being like, you just like can't compare like men and women's football things. I'm like, can you?
Well, yeah, you can't because the women won.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why you can't compete.
But it's just like, you don't see women out here like undermining men's sports. Like really, you don't.
Apart from me.
But you're not undermining it. Like, do you know what I mean?
I would if I could. Give me the platform.
Yeah, I know. Give me the platform.
No, but like, I feel like it's, yeah. I totally know what you mean. It's a shame because why can't the two live in harmony?
Yeah. It's a great question. It's a really great question.
It's a question I've been asking my whole life. In 1915, Alice became a president of a local sports club in Paris. And before long, she was inspired to co-found the FSFI, the Fédération Féminine Sportive de France. The aim of the club, to expand women's presence in the sporting world. She is reported to have said,
women's sports has its place in social life in the same way as men's sport.
With this echoing in her message, Alice turned her sights on the Olympics. To Alice, it was absurd that women's presence at the Olympics was minimised to a few sports. She knew it wouldn't be easy as she faced Coubertin, the man who founded the Olympics.
Here he is again.
He's back.
He's back. The villain who never leaves the Olympic story.
My nemesis. here are just some of his views on women at the Olympics. Women should really only be there to award the men their winnings.
If women were included in the Olympics, it would be an organisational headache.
Women playing sport in public was unladylike and inappropriate.
Some sports are just not becoming of the female nature.
The Olympics were for best athletes in the world. This could not include women. Alice, on the other hand, didn't agree so much. In fact, Alice's goal was to ensure that there were the same amount of events for women as there were for men, including masculine sports such as soccer, rugby, and athletics.
Looking at some of these points, like that Pierre had made, some of the, like, so many of them still exist today.
Yeah, hugely.
And I do think, because, like, this is not happening a long time ago, and I feel like we're obviously still living through a lot of these, like, gendered politics, but, I mean, it still checks these days a lot of these things, which is sad.
Yeah, like, the idea, like, I feel like there's this sort of idea, not to talk about football again, but, like, the idea, like, oh, it's kind of too much trouble to make sure that women's football is on a level with men's, and, like, the idea that, like, obviously, a lot of it has, as with so many things these days, a lot of it has to do with money. And, like, men's football brings in so much more money than women's football. And it's like, well, you haven't really given it a chance. Do you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Totally. And then there's also just, like, really silly things. Like, I remember I had a friend at uni and she really wanted to play rugby. And she didn't play rugby because she was worried that everyone was going to think she was a lesbian.
That's so sad.
And isn't that so sad? Yeah. Like, think how many, like, women, like, would have just wanted to do something they enjoy and don't because they're worried about, like, stigmas like that.
And I feel like there's so much intertwined with, like, women and sport and their bodies. Like, the idea that, obviously, having boobs and playing sport,
yeah,
you got to be able to strap the girlies down. Otherwise, it's so uncomfortable to play. Mm-hmm. Things like, I feel like a lot of fitness and sport with women is also wrapped up in kind of conversations about losing weight.
Yeah, shrinking.
Like, so much of it is about, like, oh, do a sport, or, like, oh, join the gym, and you're, like, losing weight is, like, the first reason why you would
do
it,
sport,
rather than, like, maybe it will make you feel good and it will be fun, which I think is a real shame.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's just horrible things about, like, you get your period.
Yeah, and then you can't play sport on your period because you have to lock yourself in your basement, your period basement.
Obviously, and do rituals and stuff.
Yeah.
Sad. And, like, genuinely, they have only just in the last few years started researching the impact of periods on women's performance in sport. It, like, it wasn't, you didn't get, like, any, not saying there should be special circumstances, but, like, it was very much.
But, like, we didn't even know whether periods would make you a better athlete or a worse athlete or that sort of thing.
Or, like, how to train for your cycle and things like that. And every female athlete obviously gets their period, or it became a goal where you lose your period, so you wouldn't have to have, like, you wouldn't have to have time off training or whatever, or you didn't have to deal with, like, the physical impacts of having your period. And there's just, like, no scientific research until, like, the last few years. And it's just, like, if men were bleeding out of their dicks once a month and wanting to play sport, we would have researched it.
It also feels like there's kind of, like, quite a nasty streak of it in the last few years. That research has been going on, but it's been weaponized in terms of, like, the trans community to, like, use against, like, trans athletes and make sure that they, you know, shouldn't be allowed to play in the, like, teams that they match their, like, preferred gender and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It's a whole mess.
It is a mess. And I fully believe that male commentators and things like that, they stir up the trans debate because it divides from the real problem ahead, which is, like, inequality in sport. And it's very frustrating to see.
And also, like, God, I'll probably get killed. No, I won't get killed for this, but, like, it's just sport.
I know.
Like, it's just sport.
I know, I totally agree.
It's just sport. It's just a bit of fun, isn't it?
It's just a game.
It's just a bit of fun.
It's just a bit of,
like, I know there's a lot of money in it, but I think, like, it's just a bit of fun.
Put on some micro or run around.
It's sports day for adults, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
It's sports day.
Yeah, you just want a podium and some claps. And we
dare I say, get a real job.
Yeah, grow up.
I say, someone that does a podcast sends tweets.
Sends tweets.
Okay.
Anyway.
Alice began her campaign with track and field as she recognised that athletics were often the star events of the Games. Alice pitched to the Male Olympic Committee for women to be able to compete in the 1920 Games in Belgium in athletics. Coubertin and the men rejected the offer. Determined, Alice founded the International Women's Sport Federation, which united national federations into one group and allowed technical standards and records to be brought into women's sport. The aim was to bring more regulation to women's sport, as there was in male sports. Alice knew that sport and publicity go in hand. she began to invite journalists and newspapers to cover women's sporting events. In Manchester in 1920, Alice organised a women's football game that attracted 25,000 spectators. Alice was making moves in increasing the popularity of women's sports across the board without any help from the Olympic Committee. Anne-Cécile Genre, a documentary filmmaker, made the film Alice Milliat, The Unsuitables. On the life of Alice, Anne commented,
"Alice fought so women could be free and have control for the way they moved and the way that they dressed. That's a universal thing. That's something women on the planet are still fighting for."
Good for her.
She's very smart. Yeah. She's like, "I know that you don't take women's sports seriously, so I'm going to go make everyone else take it seriously, yeah, and then I'll come back."
Like, she knows that if there are other eyes on the sport, then men will follow. And also, like, she's marketing, basically.
She's a PR. Working. She's and a PR working. Girly. And, it is,
and also, 25,000 spectators at a football game.
That's a lot of people. It's a lot of people. And I love that she is, like, with this, like, International Women's Sport Federation. She's just, like, literally galvanising girlies.
She's just like, "Fine, I'll do it. You don't want to do it? Fine, I'll do it."
She's making her own seat at the table.
Good for her. Whilst making moves in her own space, the Olympic Committee still wouldn't budge. So she thought, "Fuck it. I'll do my..." We never script fucking.
Well, I can do it now.
Whilst making moves in her own space, the Olympic Committee still wouldn't budge. So Alice thought, "Fuck it, I'll do my own Olympics for women." And so she did. On August 20th, 1922 in Paris, Alice stood in a stadium and said,
"I hereby declare the first female Olympic Games open."
77 women on 5 teams competed in 11 events. 18 world records were set and 21,000 people attended the event. All competitors were women athletes from Czechoslovakia, France, Great Britain, Switzerland, and the United States. In the stands, journalists took pictures and reported the event. She held the games in between the 4-year cycle of Coubertin's Olympics. The event was held 4 times between 1922 and 1934. However, it is known in history as the Women's World Games. This is because Coubertin kicked up quite a fuss about the use of the name Olympics, a deliberate move made by Alice to stir up some controversy. She knew it would piss him off, basically forcing his hand. Coubertin's dislike of her using the name meant that they entered into conversations about changing the name. Alice only accepted to rebrand as Women's World Games if women were allowed to compete in athletics in Amsterdam in 1928. Though a win, it wasn't without compromise. Alice, for example, wanted 10 events for women, but was only granted 5. Nevertheless, she was granted a seat as a judge of the Games, making her the only woman judge there. Women at the Olympics would go on to face further struggle with historical events such as the Great Depression and the cancellation of the Games due to World War II. Many sports would be added and then redacted in the name of masculine sports, but Alice was crucial in securing women's places at the Olympics. In 2024, though sexism in sport is rife, the Games have at least reached gender parity. It is uncomfortable to think where we might have been had it not been for the daring actions of Alice. The Alice Milliat Foundation was set up in 2016 and is dedicated to women's sports. You can also visit Alice Milliat Street in Nantes. Coubertin is such a prick.
He's such a prick, honestly.
Such a prick. What is your problem?
Like, she had this, like, amazing event. 21,000 people attended. 77 women are there. World records are being set, presumably because there was no record taking before, but still. And he's still like,
I just feel like if you are a man... Mm-hmm. Can't imagine. If you're a man and you love sports, surely you just love sports.
And love people to be involved.
And like love people to be involved. Just love watching sports, like whoever is playing. Mm. Like,
this is what, I mean, I think we had this discussion in our Jungle Dubai episode as well, where it was considered a very masculine thing to go mountaineering, essentially. And that's a thing I find strange as well, is like if you're so passionate about something and you love it, like you don't gatekeep, like you want the people of the world to enjoy it.
Like, why are you upset that women are also throwing things?
Again, Coubertin he's an academic.
Yeah.
He's not even playing sports. You and don't have, like, the jurisdiction,
and
sir.
Also, not to be like, you know, there's kind of the argument that, like, when things happen to women, men go like, "Oh no, I love women. Like, my wife's a woman, my mother." Mm-hmm. Like, do these men not have women in their lives that they want to be able to enjoy sports in the same way that they do?
I know.
Sad.
It is sad, absolutely.
Grow up.
And I love her, like, deliberate move to be like, "Well, if you're not going to let us into the Olympics, we'll just make a women's Olympics.
Yeah, we'll just have our own and it'll be more fun.
You just like know, like, you can imagine like in a sports meeting with like all the people that should gather together and like her being like, we'll just do our own Olympics. And yeah, they're like, yeah, right, Alice, we'll just do our own Olympics.
And then she does it.
No.
And it probably has much better vibes, like huge women in the bathroom at the club vibes where everyone's having fun and loves each other.
Yeah, so true. So true.
Sad.
Yeah, I think this is a very cool story, not because like she was just doing it because she just like loved sport and loved what it was doing for women.
And it wasn't like, it wasn't, not that it would have been a problem if it was for her own gain, but it wasn't like, I'm going to set up the Olympics so that I can win all of the world
records.
All the medals,
yeah.
And like get gold and everything. It was like, I want women to have a fucking great time.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do it.
Yeah. It's very...
I love that for her.
Yeah. I was also thinking, like, obviously, as we've already said, that this Olympics is the first year of gender parity. Imagine if Alice could see the Olympics now.
She'd be so proud,
She'd be so proud.
Aww.
I know. Aww. I know. I wish we could go back in time and bring Alice to Paris.
I wish she knew.
I wish she knew as well.
Is she dead? She probably is dead.
She'd be... extremely old.
We don't have her death yet in this episode. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. That's normally how we end it. And she died.
We're presumed dead.
Yeah.
Alice Millia, presumed dead.
Well, you've been listening to History Gap, the Olympics mini-series.
Make sure you check out our other History Gap episodes and get your history fixed this Olympics.
Don't forget to subscribe, share, review, and keep an eye on our socials at HistoryGap_ on Insta, at HistoryGap_pod on Twitter, and at HistoryGap on TikTok. See ya.
Bye.